So welcome to CPC. Happy Father's Day. Welcome to those of you joining us on Facebook Live. We're really glad you're here today. We've got a great day in store. And today we're going to continue our series called My Favorite Story, looking at a story in Scripture that I think has some good ideas about what a good father really looks like. Before we do that, a couple weeks ago on Mother's Day weekend, Pastor Tyler quoted a verse. He quoted a really great verse talking about what it means to honor your father and mother. In Exodus chapter 20, in verse 12, it says this. It says, honor your father and mother that it may go well with you. And this is one of the Ten Commandments, but here's the thing. Out of the Ten Commandments, it's the only one that actually comes with a promise. If you want it to go well in your life, then you've got to honor your father and mother. I think that's really interesting that it's the only one of the Ten Commandments that comes with this promise. So today we want to honor fathers, we want to honor fatherhood and celebrate what dads have meant to us throughout our lives. Now, here's the deal. I know not every one of us has had a great experience with fathers in our lives. I just want to put that out there. I just want to say that. I know not every one of us have had the same experience or a great experience. Why? Because we live in a broken world with broken people where there's sickness and sin and pain. And I get that. And I want to be sensitive to your experience of fatherhood. And I want you to know, even if you haven't had a great experience of fatherhood in your life, you can still honor your father in a way that honors God today, in a way that maybe even he doesn't deserve to be honored. You can still honor him, and I believe that will honor God. Many of you today, this is a painful day for you. This is a really painful day because you lost your dad. And so Father's Day weekend is really just a reminder of the pain of loss in your life. And I'm sensitive to that fact. You know, there are moms here who you're raising kids on your own for any number of different reasons. And I want to be sensitive to the fact that Father's Day could be a little bit difficult for you. But I want you to know this, the lessons we're going to learn from one of my favorite stories in Scriptures, I think they still really apply. You can take these lessons and you can apply them to your parenting, and I think they'll be useful, they'll be helpful for you. Today could be a difficult day, but I don't want you to give up. I don't want you to check out because I still believe God has a great message for us this morning. You know, my father is my hero. My dad taught me a ton of what I know. Growing up, he taught me how to throw a baseball. I learned how to play baseball from my dad. My dad grew up himself working with wood, and he taught me how to work with wood. He taught me how to build things. My dad taught me so many incredible things. You know, my dad is my hero for all of those reasons, but for so many more reasons too. Now, my dad could be my hero because he showed up at like every game I ever had, but he's really my hero for more reasons than that. My dad was my biggest fan and still is my biggest fan to this day. Yet he's my hero for so many more reasons than that. Here's the deal. I grew up in a Christian home, but to be honest, I'm not sure how committed my dad was to following Christ up until I was in the eighth grade, 13, 14 years old. God really got a hold of my dad's life. And although my family attended church every time the doors were open growing up, God got a hold of my dad's life, and my dad became a different person. I remember his disposition honestly shifting almost overnight after he really got serious in his commitment to Christ, and he became like a different man. He went from being the father who ruled with an iron fist in our family to the father who always loved and showered with praise and love my brothers and sisters and I. My dad began to pour his faith into my life from that point forward. The transformation in my dad's life is the single most important factor for why I am who I am today, why I am the man I am today. My father is my hero because of the spiritual investment he made in my life. But here's the thing. He didn't start until I was a teenager. My dad didn't start investing in me, really, spiritually, until I was a teenager. And I think it's important that you hear me say this. It's never too late to allow God to start using you to make a spiritual investment in the lives of your kids and the lives of others. It's never too late. Doesn't matter how old your kids are. You could start making an investment in their lives today. You know, I'm personally challenged by my dad's example, and I want to invest in the spiritual lives of my kids because I've experienced that blessing. I know what it can do in the life of a child. Because my dad started investing in me when I was 14 years old, I've gotten a big head start. I've gotten a jump start on investing in those three little girls you saw. Listen, and because of the investment my dad made, I'm inspired to make an even greater spiritual investment in the lives of my children. When you make an investment, it has an impact from generation to generation to generation. You should also know this. My dad didn't really grow up in a loving home environment. It wasn't bad. They were a believing family. But he didn't grow up in a great, loving home environment. And here's the deal. If my dad would have sort of shifted into autopilot as a parent, as a man, in his faith, as a father, then I would have had the same experience he had growing up. But by God's grace, by God's mercy, he shifted out of autopilot and he began to get really serious about his faith and about investing in me and my brothers and sisters spiritually. Without that, I wouldn't be the man that I am today. You know, I almost lost my dad. When I was in college, I got a phone call. Hey, listen, your dad fell from a roof. He's not going to make it through the night. So I hopped on an airplane. I flew home. And sure enough, by God's grace, by a miracle of God's healing, my dad actually did live and he recovered and healed in the hospital. Thankfully, he lived through it. And then 11 years after that, my dad was in a horrific accident, a traffic accident. And sure enough, the sheriff who responded first got to my dad and started checking my dad's vitals and just declared him dead on the scene. But then an ambulance came and someone started working on my dad and they got just a faint pulse and so they care-flighted him to the nearest hospital. And by God's grace, again, against all odds, I get another phone call. Fly home, get to the hospital. Your dad's not going to make it. And sure enough, God healed him and he did make it. But here's the thing, almost losing my dad made me really aware of his investment in my life. And here's, I don't think we fully understand or can appreciate the investment of our parents, of our dad, until we're sort of on the other side, right? Until we're raising our own kids. And then we either appreciate the investment that was made or we realize there wasn't much of an investment made. But almost losing my dad, man, it showed me the value of the investment of my father in my life. And here's the thing, no matter what kind of father you have, you get to decide what kind of dad you're going to be. It doesn't matter what kind of father you had, because today, starting right now, you can decide, no. Despite the father I didn't have or the relationship I didn't have, I get to determine what kind of parent I'm going to be today. Isn't that good news? That's great news. Because it doesn't matter what kind of father you had. You get to decide what kind of father or what kind of mother you get to be. You know, there are a few characteristics, a few attributes of great fathers that we find in one of my favorite stories in the Bible. The story is the prodigal son. It's in Luke chapter 15. And Jesus tells this most incredible story in Luke 15. It's a story called the prodigal son, so we tend to focus on the son in this story. But the real hero, the main character of the story, is actually the father. And I think by looking at the story of the prodigal son, we can begin to sort of pull out some qualities and some characteristics, some traits of a good father, and begin to understand what a good father really looks like. So the story Jesus tells, just to give you an idea of what it's about, is about a wealthy father who has two sons. And the younger son comes to his father and says, "Dad, give me my share of the inheritance." And against all odds, the father says, "Okay," and he gives him what's coming to him. And then the son takes the wealth he's been given and he goes off and lives wildly in a distant land. And he wastes everything, his whole inheritance. And then a famine strikes the land and the son runs out of money and he starts working in the fields. He starts feeding animals. And as a Jewish young man, he's feeding unclean animals like pigs and he wants to eat the food the pigs are eating. That's how desperate he is. And then as the story goes, when he's out there wanting, desiring the food the pigs are supposed to eat, he comes to his senses and he says, "How many servants live in my father's house who have a way better life than I'm living right now?" And the scripture says he literally comes to his senses and he goes home. And as the story goes, the father is waiting, looking to the horizon, keeping a watchful eye, thinking, maybe today is the day my son will come home. And eventually he sees the son, and he doesn't wait for the son to approach him. The story says the father literally hikes up his tunic and he runs to his son and he showers him with hugs and kisses. And he throws a big party. He says, we have to celebrate. We have to celebrate because my son has come home. And then the older brother, who's the rule follower in the group, gets upset. He says, what? Why are you throwing a party for my younger brother who just squandered his entire inheritance? Yet for me, who I've done everything you've ever asked, you've never even thrown a small party for me and my friends. And the father goes to the older brother and pleads with him, please, you have to understand, I love you just like I love your brother. And everything I have is yours. But we had to celebrate because this son of mine who was lost has come home. And we had to party. We had to celebrate. And it's this beautiful story. So we're going to jump right in, actually, on this Father's Day. We're going to unpack this story and identify some of the characteristics of a good father, starting in verse 11 and 12 in Luke 15. It says, Jesus continued, there was a man who had two sons. The younger one said to his father, Father, give me my share of the estate. So he divided his property between them. Sort of the first characteristic we see in this story is that good fathers are overwhelmingly generous. Good fathers are overwhelmingly generous. Listen, when I first read this story, I get a little frustrated with the father in the story. Wait, why are you going to give this brat, this young punk, this younger brother, why are you going to give him his share of the inheritance? It seems like poor parenting to me. I want to recommend some books for this guy to read about raising a strong-willed child, you know? But here's the reality. How many times has your father and did my father supported you in the most unrealistic pursuits? Listen, my dad put me through select baseball all throughout my younger years, even though I'm pretty sure he knew I wasn't destined to be the next Nolan Ryan, okay? But he did that. Why? Because good fathers are overwhelmingly generous. And come to think about it, my dad never in my whole life put himself first. Never. He always sacrificed for my family. He always sacrificed for my brothers and sisters and I. He never put himself first. He always put himself last. Because good fathers are generous toward their children. The next characteristic I think we can see is that good fathers never stop caring for their children. Good fathers never stop caring for their children. Verse 20 says this, but while he was still a long way off, his father saw him and was filled with compassion for him. I love this picture in the story because this father's never stopped scanning the horizon looking for his wayward son. Listen, in traditional Jewish thinking, everyone would have suggested, listen, when this son took his inheritance and left, the father would excommunicate him from the family. You're out. Don't ever come back. You're no longer my son. I never want to see your face again. And the father should have, by all rights, according to Jewish traditional culture, lived like his son no longer existed. But not only does the father not forget about his son, he keeps a careful eye trained on the horizon in hope that his son will come to his senses and return home. Because no amount of distance between the father and the son will stop the father from caring for his son. Listen, if you read between the lines a little bit, you know that when the father is scanning the horizon looking for his son, he knows if he ever sees his son, it'll be for one reason and one reason only. Because the son's broke. Some of you are like, I have a college student here this weekend. Just kidding. No. But the reality that if the father ever sees the son, it'll be because he's broke, doesn't stop the father from looking longingly in hopes, literally praying and hoping, I hope my son comes home. I hope today is the day I see my son. And I can imagine the father working out on his land, working, doing all of these things, but continually stopping and looking to the horizon, hoping he would see his son. Because good fathers never stop caring for their children. They never do. Next characteristic of a good father is that good fathers are affectionate toward their children. Good fathers are affectionate toward their children. The rest of verse 20 says this. It says, the father ran to his son, threw his arms around him, and kissed him. Listen, this is an adult son who just wasted half of all your wealth. And yet when he returns home, the father does what no righteous, respected Jewish leader, nobleman would do. He hikes up his tunic and disgraces himself. And he runs to his son. And then as if that's not enough, he begins to shower him with hugs and kisses, his adult son. Because good fathers are affectionate toward their children. The picture of this story, of the father in this story, would have been disturbing to Jesus' audience. The crowd would have expected more likely that the father would stand back and wait for the son to approach him and then to prostrate himself in an act of submission and contrition. They would have expected Jesus to tell the story that the son approached the father and the crowd gathered around him and began to hurl insults and abuse at him. And then as he lay before his father in a most vulnerable position, the father would berate and belittle and scold him in front of the entire crowd and then physically beat him in an effort to earn back a semblance of respect in the community. But that's not what the father does. The father runs to his son and he begins kissing and hugging him, and the son deserves a beating, but instead he receives incredible affection from his father because his father loves him and he's a good father. You see, the father knows that a crowd's going to gather. They're going to hurl insults and abuse at the son. And so he runs to him in an effort to shield him and protect him and rescue him from the attack of the crowd. Isn't that a beautiful picture of a good father? You know, sometimes as men, we really struggle showing affection. I get it. I'm not a real touchy-feely guy. Like, don't come up and start giving me kisses after the service, okay? We're not related. But here's the deal. My dad really didn't start hugging my siblings and I and saying, I love you, really until I was 13, 14 years old. But he started doing it. And it changed our family forever. It made an eternal, lasting impact on my siblings and I. It changed us forever. The father in the story is hugging and kissing his adult son. I think it's important that you know it's never too late to start showering your children with affection. Now, here's the deal. Maybe the embrace of your father is a painful memory. Maybe even me talking about a father embracing his child with hugs and kisses conjures up really painful images for you. And I can't help that, and I have compassion for that. But here's the deal. Maybe you never heard the words, I love you, growing up, and that scarred you deeply. And because of that, you don't feel comfortable using the words, I love you. Well, I want to set you free today to take a little step toward showing affection in a healthy way. So here's the deal. You can't go from, like, I don't show any affection to showering hugs and kisses overnight, okay? That might be a little overwhelming. But what I want to challenge you to do is just start somewhere. Come up with one way you can show affection that you don't normally show and start showing that to your children. And then watch how God will use that in the life of your child and in your life. Start doing it today. Don't wait. You know, I have three little girls, and I got to tell you, I'm constantly showering them with affection. I love to kiss and hug them as often as they'll let me. My two-year-old, the little one you saw on the screen, she runs for me and says, no kiss, Dada, no kiss, Dada. And I chase after her, you know. I hope it's just because she wants me to chase after her. I'm in counseling trying to work through it. But I do. I love my girls. And here's the deal. When we shower our children with love and affection, it insulates them. It protects them. It rescues them from the abuse and the insults and the challenges and the difficulties of this life and this world. It inspires courage and strength in a child when you embrace them with affection. It has the power to bring confidence into the lives of those you love, just simply by showering them with affection. You embolden them, you make them brave against the attacks of the world, because good fathers are affectionate toward their children. Verse 21, we read, the son has this speech that he's been practicing that he wants to give to his father, right? So all the way from the distant land until he gets to his father, he's just rehearsing this speech in his mind. The son gets in front of the father and he says to him, Father, I've sinned against heaven and against you. I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. And he's just rehearsing this speech over and over. Now he's in front of the father, but the father doesn't even need to hear the speech because he's already decided that he is going to extend grace to his son, because good fathers extend grace. That's what good fathers do. They extend grace. And that's what the father does in this story. The father won't even let his son get the words out. In verse 22, the father just cuts his son off. Right in the middle of the speech, he's been practicing all the way from the distant land. He cuts him off and he says this. He says, quick, bring the best robe and put it on him. In other words, take the robe of honor and put it on my son. Put a ring on his finger. In other words, a ring of power that suggests my son has been returned to his status. He now holds equal power with me, the father. Then he says, not only put the ring on his finger, but put sandals on his feet. Why? Because slaves and servants don't have sandals. But my son, who's returned to his position in my family, deserves to wear sandals. He says, bring the fattened calf and kill it. Let's have a feast and celebrate. For this son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found. So they began to celebrate. The father calls for the best robe and the ring and the sandals, symbolizing a return to his status in the family, because the father extends grace. Listen, I remember getting in trouble when I was in high school and thinking to myself, listen, I would rather get thrown in jail than I would face my dad right now, okay? But I didn't get thrown in jail. I had to face my dad. My dad just did what he's done so many times in my life. He looked at me and said, you messed up, but that doesn't change how I feel about you. Yeah, there are going to be consequences. Sure, we're going to have to make some changes. Sure, this and that, but I still love you, and nothing's going to change that. You know, I could be a father who extends more grace sometimes. Recently, a while back, my three girls were fighting over one doll. I don't really understand that because we have 27,000 dolls at my house right now. So each of them could have 9,000 all to themselves, and it'd be great. But they're fighting over one doll, and finally, without saying a word, I just walked over and I snatched the doll by its head and I threw it in the trash. Those of you who are clapping, you're now in the doghouse. It took my wife and the power of the Holy Spirit speaking through her to convince me that was not a very gracious way to behave. Okay? How about this one? What about when your son comes home with a less than desirable report about his grades? Listen, you got a parent. It doesn't mean you stop parenting. Yeah, there have to be expectations, and then you have to set goals, and you may have to make changes, and there are consequences for your actions. But can you somehow look at your son who just messed up and say, listen, we're going to work on this together, but I have grace for you because I love you, and you're my son. Can you practice extending grace? Listen, many of you in the room, you have adult children. And I bet if I were to sit down with some of your adult children and ask them about you, they would say, well, you know, I've just never been quite good enough for my dad. Never been quite good enough for my mom. Listen, it's never too late to start extending grace, even to an adult child. In the midst of every failure as a teenager, as a young adult, as a man, my dad has looked at me and said, you'll do better next time. I'm extending grace to you because I love you. His grace for me over the years has really shaped my heart for extending grace as well. He inspires me to be more gracious. I want to be like him in that way because good fathers extend grace often. The story continues with the response of the father's older son in Luke 15, starting in verse 25. We read about the older brother. It says, meanwhile, the older son was in the field. When he came near the house, he heard the music and dancing. So he called one of the servants and asked him what was going on. "Your brother has come," he replied, "and your father's killed the fattened calf because he has him back safe and sound." The older brother became angry and refused to go in. So his father went out and pleaded with him. But he answered his father, "Look, all these years I've been slaving for you and never disobeyed your orders. Yet you never gave me even a young goat so I could celebrate with my friends. But when his son of yours, who has squandered your property with prostitutes, comes home, you kill the fattened calf for him?" "My son," the father said, "you are always with me and everything I have is yours. But we had to celebrate and be glad because this brother of yours was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found." Listen to me. Good fathers love unconditionally. Good fathers love unconditionally. This father looks at his older son who's always been with him and who believes about himself, "Listen, I've earned the right to be loved by my father. I've done everything he's asked. I've piled up enough goodwill that my father should extend love to me. And my deadbeat younger punk brother has done everything he can to earn his way out of my father's love. And he believes he's worthy of love and his brother's not." And the father says to him, "Listen to me. You can't earn my love, and you can't earn your way out of my love, because I love you and your brother unconditionally, and nothing's going to change that. No amount of wild living in a distant land, no amount of rebellious behavior is going to change how much I love you and your brother. Nothing is going to change that. Nothing's going to take away my love." Good fathers don't love us because we deserve it. They don't love us because we can earn it. They don't love us because we perform well, because we do well. They love us no matter how well we do. And all the sports, all the school, my dad loved me in the good moments just as much as in the bad. And the father in this story is a picture of God's heart for us as our father. Ultimately, no matter what kind of father you may or may not have had, you have this incredibly loving father who is full of grace for you and for me. You know, God is also the father to the fatherless. If you don't have a father, God is the father to the fatherless. If you had a bad experience with a father, God is father to the fatherless. No matter what kind of father you had, you have this incredibly loving father who loves you so unconditionally. You know, one of my favorite pictures of a father's love for his child is the story of Derek Redmond. Derek Redmond was a 400-meter runner from Great Britain, and he set the British record for the 400-meter dash. And in the Barcelona Olympics in 1992, he was favored to win gold in the 400 meters, and his career had been a distinguished one, but every time he got to sort of the peak of his career, he suffered an injury and it set him back. And he never really achieved his full potential because of injuries, but just an incredible athlete, an incredible guy. And we're gonna watch Derek's now famous 400 meter run in Barcelona at the 92 Olympic Games. But when you watch, I want you to watch for the guy who shows up on the scene. The guy who shows up on the scene is Derek's father. Okay, so check out this video of Derek Redmond in the 400 meters, Barcelona 1992.
Steve Lewis in lane three. Roberto Hernandez out quickly in four. Now down the backstretch.
Ismael on the left of the screen is running very, very quickly. And inside of Lewis, Sunday Bada of Nigeria.
And Derek Redmond of Great Britain has pulled up with an injury. Redmond is out. Coming out of the top of the home stretch. And Steve Lewis trying to gain in lane three. Ismael in lane six as they hit the straightaway. And here's Steve Lewis now powering to the front. Hernandez is second. Takano of Japan and Ismael. It'll be Lewis to win in 44.50.
Derek Redmond, the British record holder and an important member of that British 4x400 meter relay team, looks like more like a cramp as he doesn't want anybody to help him. I think if it was a pulled hamstring, he would probably be getting some assistance. And look at this. He's going to try to finish his semifinal race. The British have a certain tradition of running, which you have to respect.
A bizarre finish to this first semifinal in the men's 400 meters. Derek Redmond of Great Britain pulled up with an injury halfway down the back stretch. He's fighting off those trying to help him to finish the race in his lane. And now the pain too much. And the applause swelling throughout Olympic Stadium as Redmond, with assistance this time, approaches the finish line he had wanted so desperately to reach. That is the Olympic spirit.
Now, you can't really see this in the video, but Derek's dad had to fight through several layers of security guards to get to his son. And in another video that I watched, he's dodging, he's juking, he's getting around, and he fights his way to his son. Because in that moment, nobody understands Derek's pain, the son's pain, more than his father. He just wants to get to his son. And listen to me, if you miss everything else I've said today, if the only thing you catch is this, don't miss it. That the Father wants to run to you, and nothing can stop him from getting to you and embracing you with his love, his unconditional love, extending grace to you, forgiveness, making you new, making you whole again, being the father that you never had, helping you become the father that you want to be. No matter what kind of father you've had, God, our Father, wants to get to you. In fact, our key takeaway for today, the thing I want you to remember on your way out, is good fathers are a picture of God, our Father. Good fathers are a picture of God, our Father. Here's the deal. When Jesus told this story, he actually wasn't teaching people how to be a good father in this life. He was actually telling people about the heart of God, our Father, for us as his children. And this Derek Redmond video is such a beautiful picture of fatherhood. Listen, there's nothing in your past that disqualifies you from receiving his love and forgiveness. There's no shame. There's no guilt. There's no sin in your past that keeps you from being worthy of the love and acceptance and forgiveness of God the Father, who is actually the father in the story of the prodigal son, who disgraces himself in order to run and to protect and to cover and to shower with hugs and kisses and affection, to extend grace because of his great love for you and for me. It's really only one thing, I think, that can keep you from the embrace of this loving father, and that's you. You're the only one that can keep you from the love of this father. You can push away. You can pull away. You can fight away from. You can try to avoid. You can try to ignore the advances of the father, the love of the father. But nothing else can keep you from experiencing the love of the father except your choice. Because he's willing to extend his love to you. Security at the Olympic Games is no joke. Derek's father didn't let the security keep him away from his son. In the same way, Jesus didn't let the pain of suffering, a horrible death on a cross that he did not deserve, he didn't let knowing that that's what it took to get to us stop him from doing whatever he had to do. to show us unconditional love and acceptance and forgiveness of sins. He fought through. He fought through because of his great love for us. You know, in summary, I think sort of the five main points. Good fathers are generous, but God, our Father, is incredibly generous with us. As Jesus proved by going to the cross and making us his sons and daughters by his power, they never stopped caring. Listen to me. No amount of wild living of the younger son made the father stop loving and caring for his son. And the same is true for you. No matter what kind of wild living you've been engaged in, the Father still looks longingly, hoping you'll take just one step in the right direction. Listen, good fathers are affectionate. And that's God's heart for us, to shower his love and affection on us. Jesus extended the ultimate form of grace by offering his life in our place. We don't deserve it, yet he offered it freely. And finally, Jesus loves us unconditionally. Unconditionally, you can't earn your way with him. And you can't earn your way away from him. He loves you unconditionally. And this Father's Day, as we celebrate and honor fathers and fatherhood, whether you had a great father or not, let's also celebrate God, our Father, who gave us the idea and the concept of fatherhood, because it's just a little picture of God, our Father, and his love for us. Would you pray with me as we close?